Welcome to the Listen to Your Footsteps podcast. I'm your host, Kojo Bafun, and this podcast is an extension of my book, also called Listen to Your Footsteps, which is a collection of essays, reflections, and poetry on things like fatherhood, identity and belonging, growing up, creativity, and the lessons learned. The purpose of this podcast is to gain insight and learn from the journeys that others have taken. I explore the worlds of art, culture, design, business, creativity, and life from the perspective of Africans who are contributing to the redefinition of the continent and who we are. So welcome to the Listen to Your Footsteps podcast. My name is Kojo Bafu. Today, my guest is Lerato Shabalala. She's an author, writer, editor, creative director, and lover of nice things like I am. She says specifically about history, art, travel, and food. She's been a senior writer for Oprah and Marie Claire, editor for Sunday Times Lifestyle, editor of True Love. She's also been on radio and hosted podcasts. She has her own podcast. I'm going to ask you about that, as well as being a host on Touch HD Online, which some of us still remember, as well as a podcast host on Cliff Central. So thanks for joining me, Lerato.
It's so nice to be here.
It's been a long time in the making. I won't delve into the intricacies of our conversations back and forth over the last 2 years.
It's actually been 2 years.
Yes. It has been two years.
And let's meet, because we both love cigars and whiskey. Yes. And we've been threatening and we just have not made
exactly.
It happen.
So my first question, you grew up in Soweto, right?
Yes, I did. Yes.
So if I had met a 12-year-old Lerato on the streets of Soweto and asked her what she wants to be when she grows up, what would have been the answer?
From the jump, you're like coming up with the great questions. Probably, I don't know, but probably a DJ. So my grandmother, when I was 12, so the first formative years of my life, I lived with my grandparents in Netherlands, as okay. 10. And then when I turned 13, I went to a Model C school. Then I moved in with my parents, Ezola. So when I was 12, I was in the transitioning period of knowing that I'm going to leave this part of my life and go to that part. But I used to, every day after school, listen to Ukhozi FM with my grandmother.
Okay.
And they used to have these stories, and they have them now, podcasts, where they're reenacting something, you're sitting and listening. She loved Kansas City, Nomalindi, and I loved how much they connected with her. It was the thing. My grandmother was like a really tough Xhosa woman. And so it was one of the things we bonded over, sitting and listening to the radio. So I probably would have said some DJ of some sort. Also, I loved to grow up around music. There was a lot of music in our family. And that's what music does for people when you play music for people. That's why I revere DJs because of how they can set a mood, whether they want you to be in love or be happy. So I probably would have said a DJ.
Because in Lesotho it was Dipale, and it was the same thing. In the afternoon, all the aunties and mothers and grandmothers would be sitting around the radio because it's a story.
Exactly. And I think you and I are storytellers.
Because I was going to say, you're saying DJ, but it feels like it was the telling of stories, and you at that time you saw the DJ as a person who kind of facilitated, enabled the telling of stories.
Big facts. I think that's a wonderful way to put it, because actually, as you were talking now, it was like I was listening to narratives.
Yeah.
I was listening to how you draw a story. Like, they remembered what happened yesterday. And so they had to sit there and remember, oh my God, it's Ban Ban, you'd say blah, 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 blah. And you're right, I think it was the story.
It's a version of soapies, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why I think soapies have always done well. It was just a different medium and a different time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think now I was thinking about our conversation, thinking, what actually am I now? And I think I've just answered the question that I've had for a very long time, which is what I've always been, which is a storyteller.
So I've had that similar journey. Like when I was introducing you, it becomes what Dion Chang at some stage used to call the slashy.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But having been a slashy my whole life before it became popular, and reading your bio, and it's always this and that and that. How have you reconciled that? I mean, like you're saying, the penny dropped. So the penny dropped for me a couple of years back. actually talking to somebody like Donovan Goliath, where I also kind of found my place. And I was like, actually, at the end of the day, I'm a storyteller in whatever form, even if it's just having a conversation with somebody. Like, I'm always telling some type of story. I'm always remembering something that happened and trying to correlate that to the space I'm in.
Yeah.
How do you then, so you went from that, and I'm going to jump around.
We're having a conversation.
Exactly. Like I told you, we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
But then going, so I mean, you ended up studying journalism.
Yes.
So what was the transition from, okay, 12-year-old, possibly, probably DJ.
Yeah.
Because of that enabling of sharing stories.
Right.
To, okay, actually, the thing I want to do is journalism.
It's actually like such a simple but like fortuitous story. So I'm one of those people that really loved high school. Like I didn't hate high school. I had fun. And it was interesting because that old way I say standard, but in 1994, so 30 years ago. I was in standard 9.
And that's any consolation, that was my last year of varsity.
Really? Yes. Jeez. Oh my God. Okay, anyway.
So you're not that old.
Thank you. So on that year, I decided I wanted to just stop being the nerd from Window Dance. I wanted to like just hang out with everyone at the time. Hip hop was happening. So I was really like not focused. I mean, I scraped through, but I wasn't really focused. I just loved being with friends. And my first year in high school, in 1993, we were asked to write some story by a teacher who actually contacted me last year. And I was at home bawling because I hadn't heard from her like 30 years. And I wrote a story that was then, I forgot about it. And then I'm in matric and my parents are like, Sissy, what are you doing with your life? And I really had no clue, Kojo. So I was packing my books and I found this book from my first year of high school. And Mrs. Bashe left a note at the end. And she said, this is really good. You should consider being a writer. And that's how I made the decision. I decided, okay, I'm going to be a writer and I'll be a journalist. My dad was like, those people are drunks. They have no lives. And if you fail, you're going to pay me back each and every cent of that. I still went ahead because I'm indignant.
And you said at the beginning that we both love whiskey, which is... doesn't bode well for the image of the image of journalists that your father had.
Exactly. Two editors sitting there having whiskey and.
So here's a little sidebar around this idea of a journalist, right? Because I know your trajectory and mine as well. Do you see a difference between a journalist? Or in your mind, is there a difference between a journalist and a writer? And I say that within context of you went into lifestyle.
Mm. Yes. I wasn't into court reporting and writing about like the hawks or whatever. Yes.
Yeah. And it seems you went into that space quite early.
Yeah.
I came to the space kind of from left field. That wasn't necessarily my background, but also was... I've always been in kind of business and lifestyle. When people ask me, are you a journalist? My answer is usually no. But I'm curious as to what your answer is.
I mean, I think that people who are real journalists, I mean, I'm not sure if I'm one. I mean, I think that I knew immediately when I started that, I'm not going to be able to do court reporting. I don't want to go to the scene of a crime. I'm actually not interested in that. And so that's when I realized what I'm actually interested in are people and what they have to say in their stories. And I think that's when I realized I'm a writer. I think, though, it's good to learn the journalistic rules. So you know how to write about people. You know how not to use children's names and things like that. So journalism is great for writers, but I think I'm a writer. I used to joke and say, I save the world one mascara feature at a time. And, you know, it's almost like a low-key diss to myself. But I feel like I'm a writer, which is why I can write for an agency, for a pitch, and I can also write a book, and I can also write a feature. I do not think I would be able to write about, like, business and politics the way other people do. And I have real friends who are real journalists, and I'm aware that there's a distance between me and them.
And I guess it's about acknowledging that distance, but not carrying with it the inherent sometimes judgment that comes with it.
Yeah.
Which is what I grappled with. So I'm the same. I'm like, I have a great deal of respect for journalists, like proper journalists, because they do what I'm not willing to do. I won't even say can't do. I won't even get.
Like, I love how candid you are about that.
It's like, I'm not the guy, the same thing to, you know, go to a crime scene or to go and interview somebody who's dealing with trauma or tragedy. And like, I have a great deal of respect for those who can.
Oh, 100%.
But to a certain extent, there were times when it felt like where one feels less than, because I'm like, also, you know, although I studied, like I did a BCom and I did economics and marketing, I didn't retain enough of that to be able to write efficiently or effectively about business.
Can I tell you why I understand that? I got that when I went into advertising, and people in advertising obviously went to AAA. Did you go to Vega? You know, it's a very big thing in advertising. Like, which institution did you go to? And I was like, I was a little bit imposter-ish because, I went in through the back door. So I get that feeling of like, you're part of the community, but you're not really like the hardcore people who, you know, studied the thing.
What was your first break into kind of magazine? Because we'll get into that. Like, you have a love for magazine. Or you, I don't know whether you still have it, but you had a love for magazine that far surpassed mine.
Yeah, I actually recently had an epiphany as to why, and it's a sort of a very deep into the violins movie. So let's start with the how did I get in. It was really interesting. Today is Tebow's 50th birthday.
Okay,
and I remembered that Tebow's was my first ever interview in 1998.
Wow.
He had just started at Metro, and they just set their lineup. I was working for Drum at the time. They would fire me 3 months later, but we'll get there. and they said, going into, so you can't do, you know, in Drum at the time, they would do like double Oshi stories and all these things. And they were like, oh, this bougie girl, just go interview DJ. So that was my first thing that I did. And I got there and I was like, hi, I've never interviewed anyone. This is my first time. And he was like, relax. He was like, it's fine. My name is Tabo. And he was so nice to me.
And he's a good person to start out with.
He was lovely, hey? So I was very like, yeah, I started out with him. One of my friends started out with Vinolia Mashiho. And she was crazy. Her interview. Her start was crazy. So, and then I got fired 3 months later. So at the time, okay, now I'm telling the real story. So, The three magazines that were sold together were Hesho, Not You, and Drum.
Mm.
They had the same editor, weirdly, but Drum was the only one based in Joburg. And it had like an editor who's not really an editor, basically like a principal of the bureau, you know? And she really liked the journalists, the people who actually went and found. I remember once going into an editorial meeting and one of my colleagues saying, there's this guy who's been living under a grave for the past 6 months and he's alive. And I went, and I remember the lady at the time looking at me like, what's funny? And so we would write stories, send them to her, and she would send them to Cape Town, and she's just blocked mine. And she was just like, this girl thinks she's way better than this. And I didn't think I was way better. I just think I couldn't do it. Like, I just could not. Yeah. So then they promptly fired me. And then I spent like a year afterwards in like a deep, 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 deep depression. not knowing what the hell I was going to do. And I had found the job through my lecturer, who knows Esmeri Vederman, who was at some point, I don't know if she still is, the CEO of Media 24. And about a year later, I'm answering calls. I'm a receptionist. I get a phone call and they say, listen, Esmeri wants to talk to you. Okay, so get on the phone. And she says, I thought you had something. And I was really disappointed with what happened to you at Drum. So I want to give you another chance. I want you to know, if you don't crack this one, like, forget about journalism. And I'm like, oh, damn. And so I lied. I got an interview at Fair Lady with Alice Bell, who was English. She was like Anna Wintour, but with a black bob, and spoke like she had a hot potato in her mouth and barely said anything like audible. She was so classy. And I interviewed with her and I felt like I stank. Like, I got home and my mom was like, so how was it? I was like, I don't know. I thought I didn't not get it. And then they called me and they said, she liked you, but she wants you to move to Cape Town. I said, well, I am packing my bags and I am leaving. So that's how I got in. So my first job was a real job into journalism after being fired by Drum, was as a junior writer at Fair Lady in Cape Town.
Nice. And you were young enough to be able to...
I was 19.
Although, I mean, that at that time, I think the idea of hopping and moving to even another part of the country was...
There's never been anywhere.
It was not... But it wasn't... Like now, people do it all the time.
All the time, but then
it was, you know, people didn't do that.
No, my parents were nervous. I remember my dad got lost to the airport. I was like, why are you lost to a place we've been to before? They're just like, oh my God, this child, we're sending her off so it wasn't a thing then, but it was great at the time. I had my first adult drink in Cape Town.
What was the writing like in terms of, because I mean, what you talked about or what you alluded to is something that's kind of, it unfolded as magazines started developing in this country, all media.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, for example, like the Drum, Ace Renoud, that landscape, I'm talking about it and it feels less relevant now because of the death of magazine.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing was context, right? So the people who were in charge of editorial, their context was very different. So advertising, I mean, it still happens every now and then where, you know, in advertising, you see an ad and black people are usually singing and dancing,
yep.
Right? In magazine, it was a lot more subtle.
Mm.
And coming into, you know, coming to that space at that time, where you don't actually have the power to kind of guide it.
Mm-hmm.
What was, I mean, you moved between different places. Did that evolve or did that change? Did you feel like there was any change to it or it felt like the same, like what, Groundhog Day, the broken record?
It just, not only did it become Groundhog Day, it became worse because everything around was changing. So can you imagine when everything around the industry working is changing, but your industry refuses to acknowledge? What I discovered was that when I was writing for mainly a white audience, it was, and then I remember I haven't answered your question about why I loved magazines the way I did. But it was mental health and money and bettering yourself. And when I came back to Joburg, I then worked for Drum, rehired me after firing me. So, you know, things work out in the end.
Yes.
And and there it was like gossip and people's business and who's lost their car. And so I found that it was almost like the stereotypical things of what black people do. Magazines for black people drove that. Yeah. Hard. And when you fought, which is what I did, and when you were fighting against that, it's like, wait, but this is what people want to read. It's like, no, there are all kinds of black people. Some people want to read about cigars and whiskey, and some people want to read about like who's sleeping with who. I want to write for the people who are not interested in other people's business but are very much minding their own business. So it was frustrating, difficult, stereotypical, but also exhilarating when you got the right team in the right people. But between that and the advertisers and people assuming what Black people should do got really tired for me.
But you stayed in that, you stayed in the space, right?
I did.
I mean, True Love.
I did. You had Fair Lady, I did Luminance. I did Marie Claire. I did Oprah. I actually, Kojo, realized why I loved magazines so much. Okay. And I love them because I have been a deeply insecure person all my life. Like deeply, deeply, deeply insecure. And I loved what magazines presented, which is something that's not real, which is perfection, which is something that I was running after for a very long time. And the idea that you could take somebody who may not always feel so confident about themselves, but put them in a great dress and clear their skin and, you know what I mean, and give them hair. And in a way, I was doing that for myself as much as I was doing it for those women, because I have never really been okay with myself as myself. And so magazines fed a very deep hole that I had, which is, I think I need to be better at everything. So I've got to exercise and wear all the heels. And you remember me, like you barely ever saw me without heels because that's, you know, and first, perfection is an illusion. It's not real. Absolutely. I would see people say, oh my God, Gail Mamelana looked so amazing in that photo. Meanwhile, we've clipped, our world. And I just realized I loved it because I was trying to get an answer for something that was actually inside of me, which is, you are okay as you are. There's no such thing as perfection. And insecurity is about you and you have to deal with it. And so I hid it also. So magazines are great because if you are insecure and you have the armor of the look, the hair, the gown, the title, then you're not the small, I'm not the small person I think I am. I'm the person that I've presented to you. So you don't even know how deeply insecure I am because you're looking at everything that I am externally. And so, and as because of that insecurity, also deeply guarded because I didn't want anybody to know. So then it looks like aloofness. You know what I mean? It looks like, oh, she thinks she's the shit because she's like, da, da, da. And it's like, no, I'm a deeply insecure person who's wearing all this armor so I can feel good about myself.
So that kind of evolution or that level of self-awareness, when did that come? I mean, because like when you're sitting in magazine, like you're saying, you're presenting something to the world, right? And your career has, from a professional perspective, kind of evolved. All of a sudden, I'm talking to you, you're in an agency. And I'm like, okay.
What?
So it's no more about that image that you're projecting through the work that you do. So when I was at Destiny Man, people used to say, oh, it's so cool. You get invited to all of these things, right? And I'm like, I'm not invited. My job title is invited.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I have to go with. Right.
Yep.
But when I went to Destiny Man, I was 38, 39. I turned 40 at Destiny Man. So I was a lot more comfortable in myself and a lot more aware of the illusion that being an editor has. And therefore didn't necessarily buy into it. So I did the things that I had to do because that's how the game works. But I was also very clear that it's not all of me. It's a part of me.
Yes.
But it's not my whole person. And I always say I'm grateful for the fact that I achieved from the outside that level. I mean, for people, that was the pinnacle, right?
Oh, of course.
But I achieved that.
And you were excellent at it.
Thank you very much.
I'm not saying
but
it just
I achieved that when I was turning 40. Like, I wasn't a kid anymore because I know that if I'd gone into that space younger, it would have probably gone to my head and the letdown would have been really painful. So what was that? I mean, it's obviously probably not a moment. Like we try to look at life as moments, But it's usually a gradual thing. But was there a moment? Has there been a moment? Are you still kind of figuring it out as today?
I mean, oddly enough, also, I think it was turning 40, because what happened with me is when I saw digital, like, coming after magazines, I was like, I was in rooms, I was senior, I was young enough to see the change, and I was senior enough to be in rooms where decisions were being made. And I could tell that people were not understanding what was about to happen, that we were in trouble. And so I was like, I'm going to jump ship while I still can. Okay. And I went into advertising. And what I did there, so advertising also facilitated the same illusion of perfection, because advertisers and marketers are selling to people's insecurities. You don't like the way you look, here's this makeup. You don't like this. You know what I mean? So I it's not like I moved from one thing that was different to the other. Yeah. I just went from selling dreams from a authentic way to selling dreams in a monetary way. Like, we need to get people buying this airtime or whatever it is, because you need it, you know? And then I was like, I'm like you. You know, so the people know you, Koja, as a poet. The people who know you from Kaya. The people who know you as an editor. The people who know you as a writer. And also, so depending on when you got introduced to me, you know a different part of me. That you don't know certain parts of me. And then I was like, I turned 40. It was the pandemic. So my life was basically, can we use Chris was here? A little, it was a shit show. My life was a shit show. And for me, the pandemic was excellent, because it was like, you're running from something and you are not going to go anywhere. You're not going to be able to go to any restaurant. You're not going to be able to dress yourself up. You're not, there's nothing that is going to, you're going to sit with yourself and actually do that interior work of like, what are you doing? And so that was the moment, like 2020 was that moment. I was like, you need to stop and figure out what it is that you want to do, what makes you happy, and being okay with failing and failing forward and failing with laughter and failing and enjoying and failing and trying again and giving up and being defeated. That's going to have to be okay. You can't just want everything to work out. So that was the moment when I was like, oh, it wasn't my job description. What people don't know, Koja, is when you're going to those events, 25% of your output as an editor is to go to events. So when people see us, they don't know. It's in our job description. One of the first things that they ask you is, Koja, are you okay with going out? And even if you're an introvert, like both of us are, hey, you like the works, you're going to say, yeah. You know, we dress up, we show up, we're at the place. But you best believe we're getting our way from there as soon as we can. And I'm at home and I love being at home. So now I'm just, now I don't front, I don't go to things I don't want to do. I love my Birkenstocks and my sneakers. I always was a sneakerhead. People are like, you're really that short? Like, yes, I am. Actually, I am. I don't need to wear cute heels. This is who I am. So there's a lot of love and self-acceptance that has happened just on my own, just on my own without, I also like was many other women who thought like things would like, will make me happy, you know, like. Once I have this person, and I'm going to date this person, and I'm going to be with this person, this is what we're going to do. And life is like, baby.
That's the beautiful thing about the universe. Whatever. Exactly. Like, whatever you believe, it's going to give you what it gives you.
Yes.
It's really about how you show up and how you deal with it. I mean, the pandemic for me, and I recognize that I was fortunate, because I mean, I lived with people.
Yeah.
Although, we would all be in our own spaces. But I really believed that it was an opportunity for everyone to realize and recognize what's important. Because, you're not going anywhere. Like anything that you project outwardly is no more there. And some people have, and some people haven't. I mean, business is constantly trying to bring people back. After recognizing finally that actually you can trust people.
You can.
Like, you can trust your people. I know people who worked more when they're sitting at home than they did when they go into the office.
I'm one of those people.
which is another thing, because my whole thing is I try not to work hard these days.
Yeah. Oh, let me tell you something. I am in my relaxation, rest, not the law of least effort is where I'm at right now.
That's the way.
People are like, what are you doing? I'm like, I am relaxing. I started working when I was 19 years old, Kojo. Mm. Like, I am very happy right now too. I mean, I sold my car 2 years ago. People are like, oh, you don't drive? And I'm like, no, because I found that the things were entrapping me into doing things I didn't want to do because I had the upward mobility to keep up. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's like, have the con, do this, and then have this shitty job in this frustrating situation. And we've both worked for incredibly dodgy people. But because you've got this lifestyle, you know, you've got no choice. You've got to just... So then I was like, I actually, these days, it's, we don't, you know, well, we used to drink and drive, but not, nobody's doing that anymore. We have Ubers, you can get around. Why do I need this car so much? Mm. Like, what part of me is so... Why do I need to be at that party that everybody was at?
Yeah.
So that I can hold like the yellow drink in my hand. Do you know what I mean? Like, why do I need that stuff? Why? You've always loved being at home. I love being at home. So why do I have FOMO about things that actually don't matter to me? They don't matter.
Absolutely.
So actually just leave them and enjoy the least effort. Enjoy the most simplistic life. Just like vibrate from your own essence. And you know what? It's surprising, but it's actually pretty good.
You are listening to the Listen to Your Footsteps podcast, a podcast in which I chat to Africans from a cross-section of society and sectors, including art, culture, design, business, and creativity, to name a few. I delve into their journeys, the decisions they've taken to get to where they are, how they do what they do, and everything in between. Essentially, we go wherever the conversation takes us. Where do you think magazine is? I mean, let's have the media. Yo. Let's have the media conversation because by and large, by and large, everybody's like, okay, well, magazines are dead. Mm. I have a slightly differing view because I tend to follow kind of what's happening globally. Mm. Magazines are still out there.
Yeah,
still operating. They're just operating differently.
Mm.
But before I share my whole theories, I'm curious to know where you think we are from magazine perspective, from an overall media perspective.
I think that the main thing why there's this crisis is that people are tired of gatekeepers. And no matter what we thought, we were gatekeepers. I mean, and now we're cool. Because we, no, we were. Because
I was happily one. I had an agenda.
Exactly. So, like, you know, and I think that because of social media, people feel like, why must I also have my own podium? Why must I listen to so-and-so? I can decide what I, you know, want for myself. But the reason why I think there's still space, so I understand the whole thing of not wanting to have gatekeepers, but gatekeepers are there for a reason because not everybody has taste. You may think you have taste, but respectfully, you do not. And when the people who do, you can tell the people who do. You can just, they're called tastemakers these days, you know, like they, you just see the person, you know. And there's certain people that I want to listen to. I don't want to listen to everyone. I want Kojo to recommend the place because I know they're not going to be a bunch of young people. I'm not going to feel old. It's going to be a nice vibe. It'll be classy. You know what I mean? Mm. So I think there's a reason why we have gatekeepers, but I see why people get tired of hearing from the gatekeepers one. But I think with everything happening on the phone and a lot of people trying to go back to a simpler time, we want to be able to not look at our phones and still be entertained. So there is, you want to read about something without, because when you're reading it on your phone and an Instagram thing pops up and then email pops up, that article you've forgotten about it. Then you're like, oh, I was reading that thing from the New York. Let me go back.
Mm.
So I think there is space for magazines still. I just think the focus needs to be less on perfection and more like, what is the new world going to be?
Mm.
And are we representing the new world with people eating much healthier, with, you know, cars, with ChatGPT, like, are we bringing that in? I loved the digital cover that GQ did with Andre 3000. I don't know if you you saw it. Are you listening to his album? Is that
Do you listen? I'm a Andre 3000 person.
Yeah,
like
me
too. I've had enough debates and arguments with friends.
I'm on the
particularly friends who, because we all come from hip hop.
Yes.
And we come from hip hop like old school.
Yeah.
So
people love AT Aliens and Aquemini.
Yeah. So a lot of people were looking for that. Whereas I'm 51 years old now. Like I listen to hip hop, but I listen to classical sometimes. I listen to chill music. I listen to jazz. I listen to, so when that album came out, it has a space within my daily soundtrack. So it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah. And it's not for everyone, right?
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
is the thing, like, not everything's for everyone. You've got to understand where we are, Kojo, is the law of least effort. Everything is chilled. We're mindful. You know what I mean? So we can, I even know the tracks that I love on that album. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know track names. I just play it.
I like the one where he was like a panther or something, where he makes the noises. He performed it on Kimmel. So I think there is space. I'm curious to hear your thing. I just feel like we need to be clear about what we're saying and how we bring the digital world into this.
So two things. The other reason why the Andre 3000 album, and I mean, I shared that whole GQ thing with on my newsletter. The reason why it resonates with me is not just the music, it's the person and how he's lived his life since Outkast basically broke up, right? And the decisions that he's made. Because I've been on my own journey trying to figure out what's important for me. And if I was in his situation, because obviously he doesn't need to, you know, wake up every day and work to pay his bills and ensure that he has food in his stomach. And he's a simple man. I consider myself a simple person. I like certain nice things.
Oh, of course.
But I operate within the confines of my pocket.
Exactly.
And I always have.
Yeah. I remember you saying to me, people are saying they're selling their cars. I never drove anything that was flashy because I never wanted to get there.
I'm still trying to get there. Like, like I still want to walk in one day and buy a Rolls Royce Ghost.
Yeah,
the first
of course.
One.
Yeah.
And then I'll buy it and I'll drive it for 6 months and I'll sell it. It's like, that's the itch. I've scratched it.
Well, fine.
I can move on.
Yeah.
Sorry, but, interrupted. So that was the appeal. For me, that was the appeal. Just because, so Outkast is one of my favorite rap groups. And I followed them right through from Southern Playlist to Cadillac Music that a friend introduced me to. Mm. So it's been that. It's seeing kind of what he's come out with because he's been spotted all over the world with a flute in his hand.
Oh, yeah, right? He's also been on featured Ocean,
yeah.
Drake, Beyonce.
But he'll feature like John Legend. I remember, what's it? Something Lights. Maybe he did a track with John Legend that
yes,
I really like.
Yes,
as well as Pink Matter with Frank Ocean. So that's been the appeal of that. In terms of magazine, and this was kind of my theory that I settled on some years back. Because I used to listen to a podcast, Monocle Magazine has the Stack podcast. Mm. And so like, it's a 30-minute podcast. And I started listening to it when I was still at Destiny Man, like 2013, 2014. And they'll talk about magazine happening all over the world. And my thing was this, like, we were all part of businesses, we're all part of magazines where it's like, okay, website, app, when iPad apps were all the rage. And for me, the conversation around magazine was a business modeling conversation.
Yeah.
But everybody was having an emotional conversation. And it's like, you have a print magazine, you sell a full page ad for 30,000 rands, and you have a website and you're selling a banner ad for like 1,500. It's not what you lose in the print, you're not going to gain in the digital.
Mm.
But at the same time, the print, I mean, print costs are the highest cost in doing a magazine. My mini epiphany was we come from a time when the magazine was the hero of the business.
Yes.
The magazine is no more the hero of the business. It doesn't mean you can't have a magazine.
Exactly.
But it's having it, it's changing the way or its purpose within your overall business.
Mm.
And I mean, I met some guys who ran a an agency. So years back, they came and met with me, you know, asking for advice on magazine. And they ran an agency and they handled like photographers, that sort of stuff. And they put out a magazine, which was really dope. And it literally focused on their people, the people they had on their books. So it was photography from a photographer that they have in their books, fashion, et cetera, et cetera. Nice. And I was like, and they were like, they were trying to build this magazine. And I said, if you do a magazine merely as a marketing tool, if you're making your money off managing artists, you can do the magazine and it can come out once every 6 months because you're showcasing. So don't think about it just as, oh, we want to start a magazine. Now we must come out, we must chase for advertising, we do all of that stuff. You can still get advertising, but this is the purpose. You must be clear on what the purpose is. And I was always fascinated by, for example, Gentlewoman, which came out with one issue a year. And when it first came out, I was interested in the model. Like, okay, what else are they doing? And I mean, I haven't thought about magazine in a while, but for me, that's still the answer to it.
Yeah.
Is, okay, you want to do a magazine, cool. And there are different ways of doing it. What is its purpose? Once you're clear on the purpose, then it influences all the other decisions you make on it.
Yeah. And also think like the intention of it, right? So like you say, we both love things, but the intention, like if I were to do, like, I do not know, by the way, speaking of, I do not know how Mama Anna Wintour is still. Because you mentioned something about Andre that is the reason why I like him so much, right? Is I never ever wanted to be that person who's raging against getting older. You know what I mean? Who's basically like, and the thing is about the magazine world is that because it's a current world, it forces you because you think you must know who's the person right now.
Yeah.
And I, you know, Tom Ford in his documentary spoke about how everybody has a window and that every now and again, the window, we will have 15 minutes and then the frame will move and they'll move to the next thing, you know, like a train. So you and I had a moment where it was focused on us. But now imagine like now trying to be the people that we were like 15 years ago. Yeah. You know what I mean? That's not practical. I don't want to be at a club listening to Amapiano at 2 in the morning. I'm so sorry. Like, I don't want to do that. But there is somebody who's young enough who wants to put everything together, wants to take the photographs, wants to see what people are wearing. That person needs their own thing. And I want to go with the people who are with me where I am right now. And that's you, that's Andre 3000. There's certain people where I'm like, oh yeah, we're growing together and we're not acting like we're not growing.
Yeah,
we're fine with it. And I think we live in a society that says don't grow old, especially people like us, 50s and 40s, where people are just dying their hair. They're just like, I am not getting old, God damn it. And
I guess those spaces reflect life, right? And it's also part of the journey. I mean, my moment about 2 years ago, I listened to Amapiano. Somebody was like, "Have you listened to Amapiano?" I'm like, "Yeah, at the gym."
exactly.
But my moment was I went to SA Fashion Week and I was asked to host one of the fashion shows. And look, I know the people behind SA Fashion Week. I used to judge one of they have a young menswear designer competition. So I judged it in the early days. And I got there and I did not know anyone. And at the time, I think my son was maybe 14. And I realized in that moment that it's actually his world. I am still connected enough to be able to provide him with access to spaces. But literally, that is my function. And if you have teenagers, you have teenagers around you, you'll know I am probably the uncoolest person in my 16-year-old's eyes. Other people out there are cool. Me, I'm not.
Exactly.
And so I'll go, oh, can you, you know, if you want, I can introduce you to, or, I mean, he produces music.
Yeah, like, you said he did the soundtrack for this podcast.
Yeah,
you?
So he did the little bed music that I, and he did that like when he was 11. He he'd sent it to me once and I was like, let me use this. Plus, I don't have to pay for it.
Yeah, I was laughing. And I was then, listening to Kenny when you guys were talking about the rides and him coming back.
No.
School fees.
I pay enough for it. I mean, I pay for his music is on, his music is on all the platforms. Like, and I, every month something comes off my credit card and I'm just like, I'm going to suck it up. And it's all in dollars. But I'll go, you know, you have uncles, you have aunts. Like, I know people, I can take you straight into certain spaces that your peers can't get into. But they're also at the age where it's like they're trying to figure themselves out.
Yeah.
But yeah, at SA Fashion Week, I was just like, oh, okay. And now I haven't got a clue as to who is who.
Oh.
Like, I'll see things.
Who is this? Are they an actor?
Because also I'm not on social media the way I used to, right? And I'm like,
who's this?
I don't often go to events, and I went to a tech launch recently, one of the tech companies, big launch. And I didn't know, literally the people I knew, I maybe knew like five people, and they were the people who had kind of kept on, whether it's writing on tech or, you know, hosting, that sort of stuff. Everybody else, I was absolutely clueless.
And
I've gotten to the point where I'm like, you know what? It's fine.
Yes.
It's fine. And so even I want to jump into your podcast, but even experiences like this, and you were asking me about advertising and I don't do enough to build awareness around it, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like, we come from the spaces where we know the things to be done.
Yeah.
But it was also, I realized some years back that whatever I work on or my approach to things is not going to be the viral thing, right? It's not going to be the, so when I write, I still write a lot. When the world says snappier video, blah, 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 I'm like, okay, it's fine. I'm sure there's, you know, if it's 1,000 people, I'm sure there's 3 that are going to be interested in what I do. And as long as that fulfills me and enables me to do what I need to do in terms of my responsibilities in the life that I want to live, I'll keep doing that because I'm comfortable in that.
But you know, that's major self-awareness because we live in a world that says 3 people aren't enough. Are you selling the thing? You know what I mean? Everything is like, how many people, how many views, how many, you know? And so that becomes, it's like the ABCs back in magazines where it's like, wait, but isn't it just affecting one person good enough instead of like 15,000 people?
So that brings me up my question to you in terms of where you are now and what you're working on. I mean, you did the podcast a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You wrote the book.
Yes.
Now it's 2016?
Yes.
It was published?
Yeah, 8 years.
And I know you've been talking about doing a couple of books since then. So my question basically is, where are you now?
First of all, the podcast, I mean, I haven't done it since 2021. And remember, that's the time between 2020 and 2023. That's when the biggest shifts happened in my life, personally and professionally. And I had started Relevant because I wanted to know how people who have been around in the industry, whatever industry they're in, have been doing it for a while. So whether that's Melanie Bala reading the news since, you know, Glenn Lewis days, you know, like how does she stay in it, you know? Because I think it's good for younger people to hear from people who've been doing it for a while because their windows also want to move. And it's a good idea to hear from people who are like, no, I'm not, like Kenny said to you, I'm not trying to be relevant. I'm relevant to the people I'm relevant to.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I started. And I think I also wanted to do a book around women between the ages of 40 and 60. Also with the thing of like speaking to younger people, like you can do it differently. You know, I wanted to speak to people who had come out through their families, people who had changed jobs. But then I started fundamentally changing as well. So I started looking at like what's important to me right now. And I think I have had a huge addiction to productivity, where I needed to have 5,000 things that I'm doing. I'm meeting this person that I'm doing here. And I remember there was a time, Kojo, that I was very much like, why are you so busy? Why can't you relax? You know? So the things, the conversations I'm interested in and are similar to what you're saying, it's probably 5 people are going to want to hear the conversation because I want to talk about like I'm premenopausal, so I want to speak about that. I want to speak. There are a lot of my friends, so I've never been married, I don't have children, but a lot of my friends were divorcing and jumping back into this hellhole of dating that I've been in. You know, so there's certain things that I want to talk about, and it's not necessarily like famous people. It's about, I just don't want to have a superficial conversation. And I want to go back to the podcast, but I really want to figure out, like, what is the central theme that I want people to understand when they come sit with me? Is that we are just going to get very real. I don't want to hear about your CV. I don't want to hear where you've traveled, although I love traveling. I want to hear about the things we don't know about. So I'm busy thinking about that. And then also, I watched American Fiction last night. Jeez, it's so good. So good. I think it only just landed here. It was so good. In terms of the writing, the twist, the acting, the, like, everything. It's like, it's entered my top 10. Like, I watched it and I was like, oh my God, it's so good. And so I think my next part of storytelling is, the reason why I haven't written another book, the backlash of the way I see it shocked me. And now it's interesting, like, people are like, oh, this is one of my favorite, this is, was so, everything you spoke about. I was like, yeah, but at the time when I said it, you guys, we're not with it. And so I'm learning, though, that sometimes when you say something early, when you're the first adopter of anything, you're the one that's going to have the biggest backlash.
Because also with books, I mean, something I had made a note of, like, you know, the reality is that over the last couple of years, there's been a crap load of books.
Yay! a lot.
Like, I feel like I jumped on
so
a bandwagon. I feel
it.
Like I jumped on a bandwagon, even though that wasn't my intention.
Yes.
Right? And just kind of trying to reconcile myself with all of that.
Yeah.
You came at a time when it wasn't like.
No, it wasn't.
Nobody was getting publishing deals, right?
No.
So that's the one part. You also came out at a time when attention was still, it wasn't as dissipated as it is today.
Yeah.
So yes, there was backlash. But I guarantee you that if you put that book out today, relevant today, in terms of that backlash, it would be a blip.
Right.
And, like, it'd be forgotten very quickly.
Can I tell you, that is such, like, it's like an epiphany, actually. Like, I just, you're right. Because now, I remember last year, like, the book is seven. When you haven't written about the pandemic, why don't you write about this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, so you guys want that. So I was a little bit early or something, or like, but it's what you're saying now, that now there's so many controversial things happening. I mean, it ain't nothing. There was no TikTok then. There was nothing.
And we move on. Like, we move on while the world moves on quickly.
Yeah, right. And you're still like, oh. So what I think I want to do, I've kind of reached out to some filmmakers. None of them have come back to me, but it's fine. Because sometimes you're the new kid on the block and nobody cares that you've been working for nearly 30 years. I want to get into storytelling in a different way. I feel like my life has been so interesting that some of the experiences I've had, I'd love to turn them into characters that I can actually see. I want to see if I can write dialogue. I did that a little bit in the book, but I want to, you know, see how I can do that. I want to see if I can develop a full character and have these stories that maybe are about me and some people I know, but not necessarily about me. So I probably will go into the fiction world, even with the next book, because I can feel it. Because these books, they tell you even when you don't want to. Because we don't make a lot of money, Koja, with books. And people don't know that.
Don't
make
any money.
I don't know why people think like you make loads of money. Like, that's why I love that when you ask, like,
Mohale.
When you ask Mohale, but
I call her Khomotso. That's her name.
Exactly. She's another slash. And you asked her, but like, how do you make money off books? Because we don't make money. Mm. So the idea for me is to try and write the stories and people. And I saw the inflection points. People are really interested in sex and friendships. And I've had a very interesting dating life. And even like the pandemic was so interesting with people in their lives. And so I think that's where I'm going to go. But I don't pressurize myself. I wake up in the morning, I meditate, I let the day tell me what it wants to do. I'm like, okay, I have money today. I don't have money today. Yes, I do. What do I feel like? You know what I mean? So yesterday, before even watching American Fiction, I was like, okay, I think there's a story. And I like things that scare me. So I probably am going to be, over the next couple of months, be very scared and afraid to write this and going to speak to everybody and get all the advice. But I'm looking forward to character building. And because I love being by myself and being alone, I have a wild imagination, you know, so I want to bring all of that in. So I'm hoping that's what I'll do. So I do corporate writing so that I can have a house. But I do want to get back. But I think I needed a step back to be like, what do you want to do? Because you can do a lot of things. And I don't know, Koja, whether you feel that way. When you can do a lot of things, you really need to decide what you want to do now.
Yeah.
And I want to have a through line. If I'm doing that, what is the intention for the podcast? How am I doing it? Who's helping me? Can I do it? Like you paused for 6 months. I want to be able to do that as well. So I don't want to rush myself. I want to be in flow with the universe.
Sounds like a beautiful place. And it's a place that I hope more and more people find. And not being, I recently wrote some thoughts around this. Just we're born, you crawl, you walk, you run, you go to nursery school, go to primary school, go to high school. Are you going to go to tertiary, get a job? The world has changed, but we still seem to be stuck in that model, in that paradigm of linear. But it's not linear. Like life is not linear. So finding that place where you know some of the things that you want to do, but it's my cliched line now is working to live. As opposed to living to work.
Koja, I cannot believe you said that. I was like, I cannot leave the podcast without telling Koja that the difference, I cannot believe you, that the difference is that now I don't live to work.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful place to be at.
It's amazing. I was just like, why did anybody tell me? All I did was do that. And now work facilitates my life. Work is, I now am the one running my time.
Yeah.
And I can't believe, I was like, why was I working that hard? Why? Like, and it's not enough. It's not as if you reach a point and then you have the next thing, then the next thing, then the car, then it's a Rolls Royce moves to a jet and the blah, blah, blah.
Sometimes we have to go through that process. We have to go through the journey to get to the conclusion.
How many people think you're crazy, though? How many people think, oh, God, you'll just become this? Because people regard me. Some people are cool with it, and other people are just like, we don't know what happened to us.
But it's also because we're each on our own journey, right? So we're each on our own journey, and it's taken living life to get to the point where it's like, oh, okay. So like my first moment was I left my job. I left Destiny Man for my children, because I was never home and they were young. So it was like I made a decision there. But it's taken me, and this was what, 2014?
Mm-hmm.
So it's taken me that long.
10 years.
It's taken me that long to get to a point where I'm clear on what that looks like.
Right.
And even, I mean, I wrote about it in my book where I realized also sometimes too much presence is a problem. And so my lesson now, like my last 6 months, is learning how to also live just for me, even though I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a brother, I'm an uncle, etc. And learning how to be selfish to a certain extent.
Yes.
And that was literally my epiphany beginning of January.
Crazy.
So, but I've had to go through
trajectory. Was it because did you feel as though presence means love? And like, because, you know, people do the neglecting of the self because they think showing up for the people is more important, because then they'll know that I love them, and if I die or whatever, they'll have no doubt. And so,
my mantra was presence with a C over presence with a T.
Okay.
And that was my mantra for a long time.
Okay.
And it's more like the last 2 years where all of a sudden it feels like that presence is imposing on certain things that I want to do, because my life eventually was structured like I'm going to set a time for recording of the podcast that takes into consideration what my family need to do.
That's one of the reasons we didn't get together. You said to me 2 years ago, for us to meet, you're going to have to come to the house because this is what's happening with my kids and blah, blah, blah. I was like, we're not going to go somewhere. And you're like, no, this is when this happens.
So, oh, okay. So it was literally a conversation with a friend in January. Like we're having a conversation and he's like, dude, you have to be selfish sometimes. And I was like, oh, okay. I mean, that and the fact that I go to therapy now. Mm. Like I started therapy for the first time in my life as a 51-year-old.
Oh my gosh.
Just before I turned 51.
Really?
Yeah. And also trying to understand that process and articulating stuff, like talking things out loud.
Yeah.
And then you kind of leave there and you're like, hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm grateful for the place I'm at now. And it's not about whether others understand it. Those who are getting there, it'll make sense to them. Those who are still at a different part of their journey, it won't make sense to them. They may see it. And I have people close to me who see it and understand it, but have a problem with the consequences of those decisions. Because there's consequences.
Oh, of course.
Like leaving a full-time job to be present for my children meant not having money.
Yes.
And accumulating debt.
Yes.
So there's consequences to it. I was willing to accept those consequences and work my way through it.
As a Black man, I'm asking for personal reasons. I've seen there's some, not all Black men pushing against therapy. So it's lovely to hear you say it. So is this something that you're seeing happening amongst your circle, or is this like your personal decision?
I have a very small circle. I don't know if I have a circle at all, but I do have people I talk to, and it's something that has cropped up over the years. I was probably the last. So I know people who have been going regularly, off and on for years, and my reasoning. I don't have figures on it, but it feels like the majority of therapists in this city and in this country tend to be middle-aged white women. And so my concern was always context. And also my context is a bit more of a potpourri.
Mm.
I mean, between between
Lesotho, influence Ghana, of Lesotho, Ghana, Germany, South Africa.
And then South Africa. I have a particular way of looking at the world, right or wrong. I have a particular way of doing certain things.
Mm.
For us to get to the point where I go, I need to change that, because it's not about somebody else changing it. It's about me going, okay, I'm aware enough to know that this is a hindrance and therefore I need to work at it.
Yeah.
You'll find that the person you're talking to doesn't always understand that context.
That's why I stopped therapy the first time.
Or has an element of judgment. So for me, the key is no judgment.
Mm.
You may not understand the context, but at least if there's no judgment, you're allowing me to work through it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, because there's certain things as a man, I'll go, I mean, like any man, there's certain things about me that are problematic. They're less so now because I'd like to think I've done a lot of work on myself, but there's certain things that I'll do or certain approaches that I'll take that come from how I was raised.
Mm.
And I don't consider it destructive, right? In terms of how I interact with somebody else. Someone may say to me, oh, you need to change that. And I'm like, I have to go to the root of it and work my way through it to decide whether, yes, it is something I need to change.
Right.
And so, but in the people around me, I'm meeting and I interact with more and more men who have gone to therapy.
I love that.
I found a therapist because I used to be part of a WhatsApp group, and the conversation came up. The group itself was problematic, so I won't name it. I had problems with it because it was too big, and therefore you get too many different views. But literally in the conversation, I said, you know, I've been wanting to find a therapist. And a guy DM'd me and said, hey, listen, I went through something recently and somebody else referred this person. And I saw her and she was really cool. Do you want her details? I was like, okay, cool. So I contacted the lady. She was in Cape Town and she's a white woman. But I had a conversation with her and I was like, it's my first time, so I don't want to do online. So I'd rather somebody that I can see.
Mm-hmm.
And so she recommended three people in Joburg. And I looked at the list of names, it was three names. I went online and I just contacted the person that I felt I'd contact. And I've been going for March, it'll be a year.
Oh, fantastic. I can't wait to go back, but I think I would love to have a black therapist this time. I found she was not even middle-aged, she was older white lady. She was not understanding. And I was like, you know what? She can't even, I think even if I dipped her in black, she wouldn't understand because it's just of the age. So yeah, I can't wait to go back. There's a lot that I want to unpack. I'm excited about going to having a proper therapist and going for a long time and working through some of these things that I at least now can talk about, you know what I mean? And not hide behind a facade of perfection. Now I can say this is what was happening and this is how I'm feeling. And that's cool. That's fine.
I think let's end it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It wasn't that dramatic.
I'm very dramatic.
It wasn't that dramatic. I mean, it's great to see you finally kind of, because we really find ourselves in a space where everything is all right. But as long as you feel like you have the tools and you have an element of peace of mind, that enables you to then kind of build that life moving forward. And being deliberate about it. So it's nice to see you in that space now.
Thank you. I think anyone who meets me now meets me at the happiest I've ever been, at the most authentic I've ever been. I love every curve, every dimple, every fucking bag I have. I love everything about myself. And it took me 40 plus years, but at least I got there. So yeah, I'm happy to be alive right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was fun.
The Listen to Your Footsteps podcast is produced by Zebra Culture. If you have ideas of what we can do better, people you'd like us to have a conversation with, or would just like to share a thought, you can email me on info@zebraculture.com. To check out past episodes, go to kojabuffer.com/podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, please share with a friend. If you'd like to get a copy of the book, Listen to Your Footsteps, check out kojabuffer.com/book. There are details on the various spaces it's available at. I'd also appreciate it if you could leave a review or comment wherever you listen to your podcasts. Finally, there's the Zebra Culture by Koja Buffer newsletter where on a weekly basis, I share a curated list of articles, playlists, videos, etc. that have caught my attention. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed listening to the conversation as much as I enjoyed having it.